This meeting of the House Judiciary Committee will now come to order. The time is now 1:03 p.m. on Wednesday, March 26, 2025. We are meeting in the Grunberg Room, Capitol Room 120. The following members are present: Representative Underwood, Representative Eichscheid, Vice Chair Kopp, Representative Mina, and myself, Representative Gray, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. As a courtesy, we ask everyone to please silence their cell phones. I'd also like to take a moment to recognize the staff supporting this meeting: Sophia Tenney from House Records, Susan Quigley from the Juno LIO, and my committee aide, Nate Graham. We have one item of business on today's agenda: a committee substitute rollout of House Bill 97 by Representative Zach Fields. It is my intention to introduce that committee substitute at this moment. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I will move to my motion sheet. I move that the committee substitute for House Bill 97, Work Order 34-LS0109/T as in Tango, be adopted as the House Judiciary Committee's working document.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
I would now ask my committee aide, Nate Graham, as well as staff for Zach Fields, Evan Anderson, to come forward. And I believe Mr. Graham will put himself on the record and walk us through a summary of the changes.
Thank you, Chairman Gray. For the record, my name is Nate Graham, staff to Representative Gray. With that, I will go through a summary of the changes. Section 1 is just conforming language. Section 2 is language that was borrowed from House Bill 106 by the governor that establishes the new crime of organized theft. Section 3 is also conforming language. However, this version of the bill removes the changed thresholds for the varying degrees of theft. Section 4 also removes the lower thresholds and is also conforming language. Section 5 is conforming language. Section 6 is borrowed from Representative Colomb's House Bill 77 that creates an exemption to the crime of mail theft if the person is an employee of a correctional facility, juvenile detention facility, or a juvenile treatment facility. Section 7 and Section 8 are also conforming. Section 9 creates the crime of wage theft in the first, second, and third degrees. Section 10 defines aggregate value. Section 11 creates restitution for wage theft. Section 12 adds organized theft to factors of aggravation. Section 13 is applicability statutes, and Section 14 creates an effective date.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Underwood.
Thank you, Chair Gray. Do we by chance have Department of Law online? I just have a question about one of the sections.
We do. We have Deputy Attorney General John Skidmore online.
Okay. This question would be through the chair to Mr. Skidmore. In Section 6, we have exemptions for corrections facility and juvenile treatment and detention facilities. My question is there an exemption that would be needed for employees of an adult facility care, whether for mental health issues or substance abuse? Do those employees or care providers need a power of attorney to open mail or to not be charged with the crime of mail theft, or do they need similar exemption, or is this a non-issue?
This is John Skidmore with the Alaska Department of Law. Through the chair, I agree with you that this particular section is not dealing with adults, and there does need to be some sort of exemption for DOC. What I'm not sure of is whether there's something like that that would currently be in law. So I'd have to go and look at that in another area. So I'll have to get back to the committee on that. It's a concept that's needed. I'm just not sure if it's currently in law or not.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee?
I have a question.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. Through the chair to Mr. Skidmore, I know that When we did the comparative between the governor's bill, House Bill 77 and House Bill 97, that there were different approaches in terms of how they were criminalizing theft. Is there any, I guess, either redundancy or conflicts with how these bills were incorporated in this current committee substitute?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I don't see any redundancies or issues with the way those were combined. I do note that this bill has also added wage theft, and I haven't had a chance to fully digest how that impacts everything. I would also note that throughout the bill, there is this additional language of the value or the aggregate value, and there's another statute that deals with aggregate values, and I haven't yet sorted out in my mind how those two things play together. So I'm not suggesting that there's a problem. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I haven't yet resolved in my head how the interplay between that added language and the existing statute will necessarily work.
Thank you. Just a follow-up through the chair. Request to Mr. Skidmore, as you do analyze that part related to aggregate value, if we could have a follow-up to the committee on how that part pertains to the bill. Thank you.
Any other questions from committee? At ease. Back on the record. Before we move on to other questions, I'm just going to make some comments about this new crime that we've added, which is wage theft. Wage theft is a serious crime, and it's time that our laws reflect that reality. According to the Economic Policy Institute, wage theft costs employees up to $50 billion annually. That figure dwarfs the losses from more traditionally prosecuted crimes like robbery, burglary, or car theft. And I just want to say for the record, if you combine the total amount of losses in America from burglary, robbery, and car theft, it is significantly less than that $50 billion a year that our employees are losing in wage theft. And yet wage theft often goes unpunished. Victims rarely receive compensation that they're owed. I recently read an article by CBS News which found that even when workers win their wage theft claims, more than a third of those cases result in no money being recovered, leaving hardworking people out in the cold despite clear rulings in their favor. The consequences are devastating. The average amount stolen in these cases is just under $1,000, an amount that might seem small on paper, but it's enough to create real financial hardship for working families and would be a felony if it was property. A lot of people in my community and throughout Alaska are living paycheck to paycheck. If you're missing $1,000, what do you say to your landlord, to the grocery store, to the utility company? You can't just say, my employer didn't pay me, so I can't pay you right now. Whether a worker is paid late, by months or a year, or never at all, the outcome is the same. They're out of a paycheck, and for many families, that means falling behind on rent, skipping meals, or choosing between medicine and electricity. With this addition to the legislation, we are saying clearly, wage theft is theft, and it belongs in the criminal code. We're working to ensure that workers who are victimized by this crime aren't left waiting indefinitely for justice or left without it altogether. This bill will help ensure that when workers are robbed of their wages, there's a system in place that not only holds employers accountable, but ensures that victims can actually recover what they're owed. I'm happy to bring forth this committee substitute and begin this long overdue conversation in Alaska about wage theft. I will now open it to the committee for additional questions about the bill. Representative Kopp.
Yes, Representative Gray. Are there other states that you have found that have this similar law in statute, and how has it been working out for them?
Thank you for the question, Representative Kopp. I will refer to my staff, Nate Graham. There are other states on which we modeled this part of the bill. I don't know if you can speak at this time specifically.
Again, for the record, Nate Graham, staff to Representative Gray, to the chair. I will have to get back the exact states that are utilizing wage theft statutes, and I'll provide that to the committee.
Additional questions? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. To the chair, I understand we're making wage theft a crime. Are there other departments that would be involved with investigating or enforcing the crime of wage theft, such as the Department of Labor, et cetera?
Thank you. I'm not an expert on this, but I can't imagine a situation in which the Department of Wage and Hour would not be involved, since the Department of Labor basically is our current agency, which we would report to if somebody is not being paid overtime, if somebody's not being paid the money that they deserve, if somebody's getting fees taken out of their check illegally, they would be reporting those to the Department of Labor. I will throw it to staff if they have any additional comment. But I would imagine the Department of Labor would be intimately involved with this aspect of the bill.
Nate Graham, staff to Rep. Gray, to the chair, to Representative Mina. the Department of Law would, the Department of Labor would be able to forward cases that they saw the employer was knowingly withholding or committing this crime. They would be able to forward that to the Department of Law. And individuals would also be able to bring this to the attention of police or the Department of Law. But I don't know the exact, not quite sure what how every single agency would address these concerns.
Representative Kopp.
Has the Department of Law or Department of Labor indicated that there is a need for this in our statute?
Thank you for the question, Representative Kopp. Nate Graham, do you have a comment?
Yeah. Nate Graham, for the record, we are having invited testimony from the Department of Law and the Department of Labor next Wednesday to get their insights into this legislation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions from committee? Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Chairman Gray. On the wage theft aspect of this, would for the employer who's accused of wage theft, would the burden of proof be placed on the employer to prove that the employee was properly classified, properly paid? Is there any nuance to that? I know job classification is a big issue.
The burden would be on the state to prove that the Nate Graham, through the chair. The burden is still on the state and will always be on the state to prove that the employer intentionally misclassified an employee, and it would not be would have to show that it wasn't just a mistake, that they intentionally misclassified this employee, such as a delivery company driver is being they're saying he's an independent contractor, yet he has a scheduled hours that he has to work, a uniform, rules that he has to follow, a company truck that he drives. That would be an example of misclassification, whereas if someone was just misclassified and they didn't know, the employer is still protected under the law.
And I'll just make a comment through our research on adding this part, that's a pretty common tactic that we see is where employees who are only working for one company are doing all sorts of things, for that one company. When it comes time for the paycheck, they're classified as an independent contractor, which for any of us out there who've been independent contractors means that the whole burden falls on you of figuring out how to do the taxes and what happened and you lose out on certain benefits because of that. And that's a very common phenomenon that we see is misclassifying people who only work for you and do everything that you want them to do, and you call them an independent contractor. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. To the chair, how is wage theft currently being enforced? Because my understanding is that the Department of Labor will investigate businesses that aren't paying their employees, and then those businesses have to pay those back wages. And so what's the difference to now make it a crime on top of the existing laws?
Thank you. I will say, before I throw it to my staff, that I agree with you. I've spoken with Jeremy Applegate, who's the director of Wage and Hour. We've talked at length about the rights that employees have when they're not being paid for work done. Alaska law is very clear that everyone in Alaska, no matter what their status, must be paid for minimum wage jobs, must be paid the state minimum wage, no matter what. And if they qualify for overtime, they must be paid overtime. But I think, and Nate will confirm, we're adding that it's never a crime. You would never be charged with a crime for that. So, Nate, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, Nate Graham, staff to Rep. Gray, to the chair. Representative Gray is correct. It's not currently in the criminal statutes. It would be more of considered a civil matter. A lot of times, if an employer takes, say, $500 from an employee, and it's going to cost them $5,000 in legal fees to recuperate that money, people would just the idea is that people would just not fight that because it doesn't make economic sense for them to do so. This would allow the Department of Law to go after these people criminally, and then the restitution would allow them to recover the full costs as part of a plea or a conviction.
Thanks, and I'll just comment on that again, in our research, the civil litigation that would be required to get back that $500 that's owed you or whatever could take, often it would take a year or more to like finish that all out. And the bottom line is we're talking in many cases about folks who are on the lower income scale and cannot afford to dedicate that much extra time towards getting back such a small amount of money. So it's really one of those things where the folks who are being victimized are the ones who can least afford to push back in any way or have the least amount of power to push back. Evan Anderson.
For the record, this is Evan Anderson, staff to Rep. Fields, through the chair to Representative Mina's question. If I might, I understand Department of Labor will be here next week to offer some more information as well. But the folks at Wage and Hour over at DOLWD, they do a great job, but they are heavily under-resourced. They have struggled to fill those positions for quite a while. And so they just simply do not have the reach all across the state that they have had in the past or really should have. And there was a bill in the legislature last session to actually empower volunteer wage and hour inspectors. That bill didn't advance, but it just kind of demonstrates that the department is under-resourced in this regard. And so adding wage theft to the criminal code gives another option for state regulators and for individuals who have been victimized by wage theft. It adds an additional recourse or an additional step for them to take.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have one more question.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. To the chair, do we know if for employers who aren't paying their employees and maybe they have been investigated by the Department of Labor, are they repeat offenders? And if so, does criminalizing, I know it would guarantee restitution for the victims of wage theft, but does that also help impact employers on paying employees?
I'll throw it to Nate Graham before I.
Yeah. Again, Nate Graham for the record, to the chair, to Representative Mina. If the first offense of this crime was less than $1,000, it would be classified as a Class A misdemeanor. If a person on page 5, line 6, states that if a person within the last 10 years has been convicted and sentenced on three or more separate occasions of this crime in Alaska or another jurisdiction with similar legislation, that it would move up to a Class C felony. So it would get progressively worse for an employer that was a repeat offender of knowingly withholding or not paying their employees.
I will just comment that I think, like so much of the time that we spend in this committee talking about crime and penalizing crime and perhaps increasing penalties for crime, I think what most of us want is to deter crimes from happening in the first place. It would be my hope that by establishing the crime of wage theft, we are deterring employers from engaging in wage theft, which without this, there hasn't been real consequences towards taking advantage of your employees in this way. So I would say, like so much of the time when we talk about crime bills, I think it's important to recognize that we're not looking to prosecute criminals and lock them up. We're looking to discourage people from committing crimes in the first place. And I think this is a case where adding this should serve as an important and powerful deterrent from not paying your employees fully what they are owed. Any other questions from committee?
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. I do look forward to hearing from the state agencies. Thank you for inviting them. And just a comment. When I was working my way through college, working for a landscaping company, I'll leave unnamed, had an immigrant from Croatia who knew the law and knew the type of job we were on, Inlet View Elementary's playground, actually. We were building all the playground equipment for it. And he says, Chuck, he says, you know, he says, we're not getting paid the right wage. And I didn't know him. He said, no, it's not right, you know, and he was telling me. And we went and talked with the supervisor. He just wanted me to stand there with him, not say anything, because honestly, I didn't know. I was 18 years old and just glad to have a job. But I remember when he laid out the law, I remember the next week's paycheck was significantly more. But I just remember it was an immigrant from Croatia who said this is not right. And he just wanted me to stand there while he explained what the law was. But he stood up. And so I recognize that, you know, this does happen. I've seen it happen. I'm very interested in hearing from law and Department of Labor if this is actually going to move the needle, if it would protections and make sure we have the right balance.
Thank you so much for that comment. I'll just add to it that I think some of our most vulnerable workers in Alaska are seasonal workers who come up to Alaska for a brief amount of time and, of course, don't know our labor laws, and that makes them particularly vulnerable. They don't know what our minimum wage is. They don't know that we just raised our minimum wage. They wouldn't know that. And I think particularly when there's a language barrier, they're very easy to take advantage of. And again, it would be my hope that we would be sending a message to employers that this is not to be tolerated. You're not to take advantage of these people, no matter how vulnerable they are. Any other questions or comments before we put this bill aside? Do we have to do something? Seeing no additional questions, Representative Mina, do you maintain your objection or do you remove it?
I remove my objection.
Any other objections? Hearing no more objections, the committee substitute for House Bill 97, Work Order 34-LS. O109/Tango has been adopted as our working document. We will now set House Bill 97 aside. It is my intention to bring this back up next week. I will be reopening the bill for invited and public testimony. Seeing as this is a new version of the bill, I'm also removing the previous amendment deadline. There's no longer an amendment deadline. If you see things that you want to amend, you can talk to my aide, Nate Graham. Thanks to my staff, Nate Graham, and to Representative Field staff, Evan Anderson, for being here today. That concludes today's business before the committee. Before we adjourn, here is a preview of our next meeting. On Friday, we'll be hearing initial hearing of House Bill 137, PFD Child Support by Representative Carrick. The time is now 1:29 p.m., and this hearing of the House Judiciary Committee is adjourned.